Okay, we are back to paper zero, otherwise known as the foreword, section three, old single column, page four. Okay, let's see, who'd like to read? Because we're pretty much just going to jump right in here. Okay, yeah. And maybe you ought to take the take the high road. just one little. Okay. Just one little thing I thought I'd mention. I was just checking the audio from last week, make sure it sounded okay before I posted it, and listened to the first part of it, and I noticed I misspoke at one point, and I wanted to just mention, because I've mentioned this before, I'll mention, use this opportunity to mention it again. Please, everyone, catch, if my subjective mind is not being mastered quite perfectly at the moment, and because you just get into one of those things where you say something, you go, "What on earth? Why did I say that?" But you remember how at the beginning when we were talking about sevens and sevens and sevens. We had the seven bullet points in the list, and all these sevens were going on. And so when I got to mentioning the master seraphim, what did I say? I said there were seven groups of them. Well, there's 12 groups of them. so.
You said 12 after that.
I don't think I did. But anyway, it's a great example. Little things like that are, you can easily not notice, that you're saying that. So always kind of, be checking, make sure I'm not saying something like that so we can correct it right in the moment, so it isn't confusing to people.
The problem is we use you to correct us. Try not to do that.
Yeah. Don't make me the touchstone. It's courageous and independent cosmic thinking.
You got to do that on purpose sometimes.
What did that guy call him? Time bomb. Purpose there.
No, I don't need to do it purposely. It's as many words as I try to put out of my mouth every time. It's hard to get every one of them all straight. But I'll keep trying my best. So let's just jump right in. There's a lot to. A lot to cover again in this section. Let's get her rolling.
First source and center. Total infinite reality is existential in seven phases and has seven coordinate absolutes. One, the first source and center. Two, the second source and center. Three, the third source and center. Four, the Isle of Paradise. Five, the Deity Absolute. Six, the Universal Absolute. And seven, the Unqualified Absolute.
Okay. Another list that definitely needs to be brought alive. Let's see if we can put a little truth into that static list. Notice the, the title of the section. And then the way they're talking about, the way they designated items 1, 2, and 3, source and center, source and center, source and center. Longtime readers all know that we're talking about the seven absolutes of infinity here. And, remember where they officially introduce the seven absolutes of infinity. Up in deity and reality, and that's that. When they introduce the seven absolutes of infinity up in deity and reality, give that official name, capital letters on all the words. It's a proper name for this group of seven. That when they introduce them up there. They even call the Isle of Paradise the Paradise Source and Center. you know, just further stressing. So, you know, using source and center in four of them. Definitely in both those places, they're, you know, seem to be trying to tell you something there. And again, those who have read for a long time know what the point is. This initial notion that's put forward in the Revelation, say, well, if you want to start to try to think about the origin of everything, let's make our premise, you know, our initial assumption, the seven absolutes of infinity. You know, that's we'll start with that fact, and then we'll go from there. And just wanted to jump up here a little bit to. What paper is this? This is paper 104, section 3, old single column, page 1146. Where we have the seven absolutes of infinity listed again. And I want to just read a little bit here. As a way of leveraging this forward a little bit. Okay, so everyone have that? Section 3, single column, page 1146.
Double column?
There is no page number. You want paper 104, section 3. Let's wait a second here. Okay. All right, so I'm just going to start, right there before that the list again of the seven absolutes of infinity, and I'm going to read the paragraph afterwards. Okay, so you have, in these papers, total reality, infinity, has been presented as it exists in the seven absolutes: the universal Father, the eternal Son, the infinite Spirit, the Isle of Paradise, the deity absolute, the universal absolute, the unqualified absolute. Okay, so notice here, they aren't stressing the source and center aspect. Here they're just, you know, going at it sort of very just direct factually. And then they go on to say, the first source and center, who is father to the eternal Son, is also patterned to the Paradise Isle. He is personally unqualified in the Son, but personality potentialized in the deity absolute. The Father is energy revealed in Paradise Havona, and at the same time energy concealed in the unqualified absolute. The infinite is ever disclosed in the ceaseless acts of the conjoint actor, while he is eternally functioning in the compensating but enshrouded activities of the universal absolute. Thus is the Father related to the six coordinate absolutes, and thus do all seven encompass the circle of infinity throughout the endless cycles of eternity. Well, you know, when you hear that last little bit there, you should be immediately thinking of the infinite eternal ellipse. See, they're alluding to the infinite eternal ellipse there at the end. Before we go into that specifically, I just wanted to point out one little thing in passing, just to stress it again, because we brought this out. Notice how, you know, so in the list you have the infinite Spirit, but then when they get to this little paragraph, they're talking about the third source and center's ceaseless acts. You know, they're talking about the, you know, the actor. So they, you know, they use the designation the conjoint actor. But notice how they word that: the infinite is ever disclosed. I tried to point that out now that we've started to talk about the infinite a little more definitively. For instance, the infinite Spirit. To understand, initially, how to think about that designation, the infinite spirit. And see, they're alluding to it here. You have the infinite, and then you have, for example, the infinite made spirit. What would the infinite look like if the infinite was made spirit? The answer is the infinite spirit. Okay? That's, you know, the way you can immediately understand what that designation means. And see, and that's the way they're wording that sentence. See, that's what they're trying to get you to see. The infinite is ever disclosed. If you disclose the infinite as spirit, you have the infinite spirit. Okay? All right, so now with the infinite eternal ellipse. So let's break this out. And so the seven absolutes of infinity, they start us with that in the revelation, because those are seven individuals. You know, they're starting us where we are at the individuality viewpoint. And you know, just let's go backwards up through this list. You know, and notice where it is on the infinite eternal ellipse. Well, this outer circuit, that's the individuality circuit. So that's, you know, where you would want to look for individuality designations. So you have the unqualified absolute. Okay, that's over there in the seventh level domain. The universal absolute is in the sixth level domain. The deity absolute, that's in the second level domain. The Isle of Paradise, that's in the first level domain. The infinite spirit, right there in the fourth level domain. Eternal Son, right there in the second level domain. Okay, so those six, you know, you can see, you know, take you all the way around. But what about the fifth level domain? Okay, there I have the supreme creators and the supreme controllers. How does that work? Okay, good. You know, see, the one thing we're missing is the universal father. And I've alluded to this before, that, you know, the universal father is a little bit different. And you notice even how they worded that. Thus is the father related to the six coordinate absolutes. Notice how they're talking about that. There's the six coordinate absolutes, and they're purposely setting the father, you know, with some differential to the other six. You know, here we are in the fifth level domain, you know, as a finite creature. And I'm trying to use my the absolute dimension of my personality to take my individuality consciousness and say, okay, let me conceive of absolute individuals. Okay? You know, and I just did that all the way around here. Okay, but, you know, I know those aren't absolute individuals. Those are supreme individuals. You know, it's right in their name. Okay, so if I'm trying to think all the way around, now that I'm not going to be looking to them. I'm going to be looking deeper or higher, you know, whatever, however you want to think of it. Okay, as I look in, you know, again, it's Trinity supremacy. That's, I'm looking for absolute. What do I see? I see the universal controller. Okay, and you know, I see into the circuit of the Father there. And I see the universal controller. Well, and what's connected to the universal controller? Well, the universal father, because I'm trying to use my personality to bring absolute individuality to a focus in my mind. So I'm going to see the person, you know, point of the circuit of the father, universal father. See, so what you're doing when you talk about the seven absolutes of infinity like this, is you've got these six very directly, but you're taking the Father down through the universal controller and through the supreme creators and controllers and putting them out here on the outside, you know, and making a full circle of infinity throughout the endless cycles of eternity. Okay? This role of the universal controller, I alluded to that. We've talked about it some before. Think about the same issue here when you're talking about the cosmic levels. You know, I'm a being, And you know, down here is a being, and I'm thinking about the Father connecting to me as a being. And I've begun to understand these cosmic levels and the sevenfold creators, and I understand now that the Supreme Being, that designation, I mean, that's an absonite individual. And from my finite perspective, the Supreme Being is not in existence yet. And so when I try to understand how the Father connects to me, it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. I mean, the Father tries to reach down and there's a gap. You know, the Supreme Being is really not there yet in my understanding of it. So how does his reach get down to me? Well, the Father up here can go over to the Universal Controller, you know, another one of his faces, reach down. Now, the Almighty Supreme, that's in the finite. Okay, there's no absonite roadblock there. Okay, you can go through there. You can get down to the Supreme Controllers and then over to the Supreme Creators and down to me. The Father, through the Universal Controller, through the Supreme Controllers and the Supreme Creators, gets to me. That's just what we said. The Universal Father, through the Universal Controller, and the Supreme Creators and Controllers, gets this recognition of the seven absolutes of infinity all the way around. Yeah.
Since the bestowal of thought adjusters, we can have that absonite. We have the potential for the absonite recognition.
Well, there's certainly that, but we're, you know, but just, you know, remember that, you know, it doesn't matter if we're talking about the infinite eternal ellipse or we're talking about you know, the God the sevenfold or, you know, the cosmic level. All of this is the finite perspective coordinated and expanded. This is not a depiction of how an absonite being understands the sevenfold. This is not a depiction of how an absonite being understands the infinite eternal ellipse. This is a depiction of how a finite being understands it. So you can take that very literally. That's the point I'm trying to make. You know, very literally, as a finite being, the Supreme Being is a gap there. So how can I understand this connection? Remember how we've talked about, you know, how important it is to recognize that when you think about the Father functioning, the Father is antecedent to the Eternal Son and the Isle, for instance. This separation into Universal Father looks to the Eternal Son, Universal Controller looks to the Isle. He's antecedent to that. The Father fragments, you turn them all around, and you have the force charge of space. I mean, they're one and the same personal ministry to the Father. I mean, in our finite understanding, there's spirit and matter separate, and the two faces are separate, okay? But not in their origin, not in the fact of their origin, they're one. You know, again, you know, the Father doesn't see himself as broken up into these boxes, but we can only comprehend the Father, you know, looking through the eyes of the finite by understanding this separation. There has to be these different faces of the Father, or we have no way to have a logical understanding, like they're just saying here, like in this paragraph. You have no way of understanding how the first source and center can be behind everything. And it's like, well, you know, it's not just one thing he's behind. There's matter, he's got to be behind that, and spirit, he's got to be behind that, and mind, he has to be behind it. So he's, you know, from my vantage point, he needs multiple faces. And then I just recognize that they're all one, you know, within the Father's consciousness. Okay? So this, you know, whole issue of the seven absolutes of infinity, we've talked about this when we were doing deity and reality and total deity. There's some limitations to that starting point, that initial assumption. You know, in the beginning was the seven absolutes of infinity, and then I'm going to understand everything from there. What are some of those immediate issues that are in play? Well, one of them you just saw. I mean, I go around the circle and I don't have the seventh one. I have to understand, you know, I have to say, well, actually, I've got, you know, this whole circle of the Father, and that's, I'm putting that down here, is, and I'm just calling that the universal Father, you know, and then I have the seven absolutes. So see, so that's, you know, that's a bit of a fudge, you know. You know, and then the other big thing, like I've mentioned, that's missing from the seven absolutes infinity is right there. What about the Paradise Trinity? That's not one of the seven. That's a big thing to leave out. I'm leaving out an infinite piece. That probably would have consequences in understanding everything if you leave out an infinite piece. Okay. And that's why, and before I mention this, just let me remind you again, because they're doing it purposely. That parenthetical, right before the list, and they say, in these papers, total reality, and then parenthetically, infinity. Remember how that works? When you know, as the totality of reality, the I am is infinity, lowercase I. The word infinity is a technical word, lowercase I, describing the totality of reality. That's what's going on. And that's when you say the seven absolutes of infinity, you know, before you make it a proper noun, that's a lowercase I infinity. It's not the infinity, capital I. It's just infinity. You know, it's this infinity. It's the totality of reality. And then you capitalize every word and you make it this proper designation, you know, the seven absolutes of infinity. But, okay.
So these seven absolutes of infinity, that's just the basic architecture of reality as they're presenting it.
Yeah,
the structural architecture.
What I was going to point out is just that, clarify that point. Notice carefully how they word that opening, you know, statement before the list. The opening statement is not total reality exists in seven absolutes. See, it doesn't say that. It says, in these papers, total reality has been presented as it exists in seven absolutes. Remember? That's, see, when you carefully, oh, in other words, that's where they think I probably need to start to begin to wrap my mind around this. But once I'm ready to go beyond just that simple starting point, I can start to put the whole picture together. I can not just have the universal Father, I can have the whole circuit of the Father. You know, I can understand where the Paradise Trinity fits into the picture. I can bring the circuit of the Mother into play and everything else. I can get the whole picture of total deity. Yeah. In section three, yeah, I'm, that's where I'm going right next.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
It says.
Yeah. Right. So now notice. See, Katie knew exactly what I was going to do next. That's exactly what the next thing was going to be. So now go back to the forward, and notice how they carefully worded what they said before the list here of the seven absolutes, infinity, total infinite reality, you know, or in other words, infinity, lowercase I, total infinite reality, is existential in seven phases as the seven coordinate absolutes. See, where if you just see, notice, like when we tried to go around this circuit, this individuality circuit, okay, existential, you know, it's existential all the way around. Oh, that's not existential, that's experiential deity. See, and what did I have to do in order to create an existential circuit? I had to say, well, let's just condense all the details of the Father down into just the personality focus point of the universal Father, and let's stick that in there. You know, that basically what through them I see the universal Father. And so that would be the seven phases existentially. See, that's what the seven absolutes infinity represent. You know, it's when you want to just try to, well, it's like, well, I don't understand the experiential deity yet. Let me just try to get a bigger picture of existential deity than some monotheistic simplicity. Let's have seven existential absolutes of infinity. But that's obviously not the whole story, because where does experiential deity come in? And, you know, and see, your first clue that the really big thing that you were missing was the Paradise Trinity. And what do we know now? That's the root of experiential deity, the Paradise Trinity. That's why experiential deity isn't immediately obvious with the seven absolutes infinity. You're leaving out the source of experiential deity, the Paradise Trinity.
Yeah, I almost get the sense here, this construction of the foreword as setting up these concepts. And then in this paper you just referenced, which is written by Melchizedek, it's almost as if Melchizedek is saying, well, we're supposed to tell you that it's like this. You know, this is what we got to work with. They said we got to do it this way.
Right. But when we went through total deity, and that paper too, you know, and the triunities and triodities there, the growth of the Trinity concept, you know, I tried to point out how many times they say, now, this is a suggestion, okay? This is just a suggestion, okay? Don't get your chisel out and your granite slab. This is a suggestion for a starting point. Please master the starting point and then take a step. Don't bury that one bag that I gave you, okay? Invest it and make it grow. You know, it's the parable of the talents is in play. You know, follow what Jesus said. You know, especially when it's so obvious, they put it in black and white. This is a suggestion. Now invest this suggestion. You know, and let's get some interest happening.
To go back to the infinite, eternal, and lifts of total deity. Okay, so one, you've got the infinite all the way up to Paradise Isle. Two, you've got the absolute deity, absolute. Three, you've got the Son, the Universal Father, and all. Okay, so how do you come up with these numbers?
The seven functional levels is right here at the beginning, you know, in section one of the foreword. That's the seven functional levels. Okay, remember when we went through total deity, that's what we did. We followed the suggestion up in deity and reality. We combined the facets of deity that they gave names for up in deity and reality with this list in section one of the foreword, where they had labels for facets of deity, and we connected the labels to the names, and we filled it out. We actually put the proper names, you know, each pair of proper names of facets of deity in those seven levels.
So
that's how you filled it up.
In all aspects of
No. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
Static, potential, associative, creative. Right at the beginning of section one. Okay. We don't want to go into all, you know, that's a big, huge story, but that's where it comes from. Yeah. And just like, you know, it says total, you know, and I know that when I get to paper 10 and they're talking about the Paradise Trinity, they tell me that's existential deity at the top of the whole picture. And that's not in this list. You know, just logically put two and two together. Okay. You know, and if you can't just get it, you know, then go up to what we just read and notice, you know, that, well, this is, you know, how we're going to initially suggest this. You just notice it and put the pieces together. You know, it everything is there for you to recognize this. You know, they do not spell this out, but they give you everything so that you can objectively recognize it. If you can put all the pieces together.
You've got God, the Son, here is two over here, but you've got God, the Son, on three.
No. You're on page two.
Yes, I'm on page two, okay.
Section one, deity functions on personal, pre-personal, and super-personal levels. Total deity is functional on the following seven levels. That list of seven. Those are the seven functional levels of total deity. Okay? And the Son in that list is divinely fraternal deity. That's the Son. Self-personalized deity, that's the Universal Father. Etc. Again, if it, those details are in the Total Deity paper. You know, you can go and read the Total Deity. We don't want to redo that all right now because that'll burn up, 5 hours. Okay. So let's just try to, let's try to see what they're trying to give us right here in this section. Okay, so read that next little paragraph there.
God, as the first source and center, is primal in relation to total reality, unqualifiedly. The first source and center is infinite as well as eternal, and is therefore limited or conditioned only by volition.
Okay, that one little paragraph. See, why is that just that little statement, a single paragraph? Because they want you to stop and reflect on that. Okay, so we've got this. If we think about the seven absolutes of infinity, the infinite spirit, that's infinite. The eternal sun, that's eternal. the deity absolute, or the infinite potential. Okay, which of the words eternal or infinite is in the name? Infinite, eternal, infinite. The paradise isle, you remember how a lot of times they call it the eternal isle? Okay. Here you have the infinite capacity, the unqualified absolute, and the infinite upholder, the universal absolute. Okay, each one of those six coordinate absolutes, they pick one of those two words, eternal or infinite, to put forward as the primary word. Okay. What does it say? It says the first source and center is infinite as well as eternal. When you have the whole circuit of the Father, not just the universal Father, you can see that very directly. Two of the aspects of the Father are infinite, are labeled as infinite, the infinite one and the infinite upholder. Okay? And the ones where it's universal, a lot of times they'll just like with the Isle of Paradise, they'll use the word eternal there. They'll talk about the eternal Father, the eternal Creator, etc. You could talk about the eternal one of infinity, for instance. Okay? So very literally, see, unlike the other six, where there's just one word in play, with the Father, there's both words. Just like they said, is infinite as well as eternal. And we are stressing that by using those adjectives differently in the different parts. Okay? That's the sort of transformative relationship of these sentences that we're looking to get here. And not just go, oh yeah, he's infinite as well. No, think literally and precisely. Can you understand it literally and precisely? And the answer is yes. Now that I have it all laid out, I can point to the facets that I stick the word eternal on when I talk about, and I can point to the facets that I stick the word infinite on when I talk about. Now, obviously, the whole thing is infinite and eternal, but what face do you put forward so that they want you to think about that first to try to get a better understanding by starting there? You can get a better understanding of the universal Father by starting with the thought of eternal, not with the thought of infinite. That's what they're suggesting you reflect on. Okay? And now that we've got the infinite eternal ellipse all laid out, you can do that very precisely. Okay. Read those next couple there.
God, the universal Father, is the personality of the first source and center, and as such maintains personal relations of infinite control over all coordinate and subordinate sources and centers. Such control is personal and infinite in potential, even though it may never actually function, owing to the perfection of the function of such coordinate and subordinate sources and centers and personalities. The first source and center is, therefore, primal in all domains, deified or undeified, personal or impersonal, actual or potential, finite or infinite. No thing or being, no relativity or finality exists except in direct or indirect relationship to, indirect relation to, and dependence on the primacy of the first source and center.
Okay, so that two paragraphs here, obviously together, and it's a very powerful stressing of what? What? Who are they? Who are they trying to meet where they are, and then begin to transform where they are? If you're a monotheist, okay, you know what? Your burning question is, you're starting to read this. Now, wait a minute. I thought there was one God. And in the previous section, you had God the Father, God the Son, God, and I was getting really confused. What the heck is going on? Is this like polytheism or what is this? Okay, the truth of monotheism is being expressed in those two paragraphs. They're saying, don't think so simplistically, factually in your monotheistic thought. Reach in and grab a hold of the truth. There is a truth to monotheism. This is it. The first source and center is the truth. The first source and center is therefore primal in all domains. That's the mono, the singular that you knew was true in your theism, your ideas about God. Okay? So that just, I mean, it's very straightforward, but don't just because it seems like, well, I think I understood everything there, ask why did they put those two sentences in there? What are they trying to really drive home solidly? They devoted two paragraphs to it, see, with a lot of intensity. It's like, now you have a hold of the truth of your monotheism. Let everything else melt away. Let all of the human, constructs melt away, and let me rebuild the picture for you. Yeah.
Why do you not have these two pieces then at the center? That's what's confusing me.
This is not I was just talking about Gene about that beforehand. In this depiction of total deity, what you're trying to represent is what's at the center. There, the relationship of the different facets of deity relative to the functional levels. There are other depictions of the facets of total deity where the infinite is at the center. Terry has created one, and we'll be using it some. Okay, that's there. You're trying to get at a different aspect of the whole picture. This is not everything. This is just part of the picture. It's how total deity fits into a functional relationship. And all we've taken those functional levels that they give you in section one, and we've recognized, yes, but level seven is not a dead end, and level one is not a dead end. Level seven wraps around and connects to level one. It's just like they said at the beginning of Deity and Reality. If you're going to really think about this in greater detail, we suggest you think about it in an ellipse. Okay? Remember, they say that right up front in Deity and Reality. In other words, don't think so simplistic and linear, like a vertical list. I mean, there's a truth to the levels of it, but there's something more than that. Because the universe is not finite. And the doorway to transition from that initial finite understanding of just a vertical list into something more is to take their suggestion. Wrap it around. Connect the two ends together. Make the seventh level domain connect to the first level domain. So that there isn't this break there. Yep.
Well, Chris, I'm listening to the questions and I'm going to get the chart. Mm-hmm. I'm on page 3. Mm-hmm. What helps me understand your chart, I think clearly, is when it says God is a word symbol designating all personalizations of deity. And then it says the term requires a different definition on each personal level of deity function. Mm-hmm.
Right, and remember, when we introduced this chart at the beginning of the foreword, we're not trying to understand everything on this chart in one sitting. It's the infinite, Okay, eternal ellipse. Okay, let's just start working in. Okay, you're going to have 5,000 questions. We can't answer all those questions all at once. Let's just let it be. Remember, let it be. And just begin to find some anchor points in it. You know, it's like Universal Father. Okay, is that somewhere in here? Yeah, okay, I can grab a hold of that. You know, and work out from there, for instance. Anything that you can do to get an anchor point in it and then start building. Don't try to understand everything initially. Use your material consciousness that breaks things up into separate chunks and goes at them in a sequence. Don't use your unity consciousness that tries to think of infinity all at once and understand the whole thing. That's impossible. A finite mind cannot understand infinity in total. You know, you've got to use your material consciousness to begin to break it up into logical components and then begin to see how those components are related to each other.
Can we make our own infinite eternal ellipse so we can understand it to ourselves?
It won't be the truth. And that's not because it says by Chris Halverson. This is not by Chris Halverson, this is by the Revelators. Okay? This is what the Revelators tell you is in each of those levels. And the challenge is, what you're looking for is not to be able to understand anything. To have your first thought, well, I don't understand any of this. I need to completely redo it. You know that's not what you're supposed to. Okay, you know that's what you're looking for. You know that you're not innately divine. You know that you don't understand, or they wouldn't have given us a revelation. You want to recognize, wait a minute, none of this makes any sense to me. That must mean my concept of God right now is completely befuddled. I need to step back and rework everything. Do you have the courage to rework everything that you've ever thought about God? Or do you want God to be just like he was in Sunday school?
I want a living
or catechism place. Or wherever. Okay? Yeah, Terry.
The first thing I'm getting is the circuits. Mm-hmm. Are you calling these ellipses circuits?
Well, there's four circuits around the ellipse here.
The individuality is the outer.
Mm-hmm. Mother.
The circuit of the father is the
next one. No. Individuality, circuit of the mother. You know, there's mother words in that second one in, right? That's the circuit of the mother, circuit of the father. Okay, outermost, individuality circuit, circuit of the mother, next one in, circuit of the father, next one in, unity circuit. Because it's not. It's got everything in it. It's got the sevenfold, the supreme, okay. Okay, so now what do they say about the first source center? You got one there? Yeah.
Given the vast difference between human consciousness mm-hmm. and our linguistic limitations and the complexities or the realities that are attempting to be communicated mm-hmm. to us here,
right.
Do you believe it's the case that Michael, as creator, part of his work is to create a conceptual architecture for his local universe that he believes will be useful to lead those consciousnesses, those personalities on into paradise, and that every local universe creator does that. It's a part of their creation.
In a unique way.
A conceptual mm-hmm. architecture.
Right. Yeah, and he's starting here with us in the finite domain, in the fifth level domain. And, each of the 700,000 creator sons is constructing both personally and impersonally a way to supremacy. And supremacy is the doorway to the rest of the picture. So each of them is constructing their unique way, and we are all following that way to the doorway, and then through the doorway, all together, all 700,000 ways. We'll go through the door together, and transcend the finite. But that, who can help you? find your way from where you are right now to a more intuitive relationship to this coordinated essential knowledge. You say, all we've done, all this knowledge is in the book. And nothing's been, you know, pulled out of the air. All this knowledge is in the book, every single thing. All you've done is just put it all in one spot, coordinated it, so that you can see it all together rather than, well, there's this one sentence in this paper and then there's that other sentence over in that paper. You know, let's put it all in one spot so we can think about it all together. We've coordinated their knowledge. Okay. all right, so let's notice what they do again. This, you know, when I read up there that other, that list of the seven absolutes and then that paragraph where they were taking you all the way around in the Father's relationship to the other absolutes, that's what they're going to do here again. So let's see how they do it here.
The first source and center is related to the universe as, one, the gravity forces of the material universes are convergent in the gravity center of Nether Paradise. That is just why the geographic location of his person is eternally fixed in absolute relation to the force energy center of the nether or material plane of paradise. But the absolute personality of deity exists on the upper or spiritual plane of paradise. Two, the mind forces are convergent in the infinite spirit. The differential and divergent cosmic mind in the seven master spirits, the factualizing mind of the Supreme as a time-space experience in Majestan. Three, the universe spirit forces are convergent in the eternal sun. Four, the unlimited capacity for deity action resides in the deity absolute. Five, the unlimited capacity for infinity response exists in the unqualified absolute. Six, the two absolutes, qualified and unqualified, are coordinated and unified in and by the universal absolute. Seven, the potential personality of an evolutionary moral being or of any other moral being is centered in the personality of the universal Father.
Okay. Now, each of you on your own, you know, spend some time with each of those points. If they aren't, you know, if you haven't done this already, so that the seven absolutes, if there's something about the seven absolutes of infinity that's still kind of fuzzy, you know, spend some time reflecting on each one of these seven points and understand what they're saying about each of the seven. And that's pretty straightforward. I don't need to, you know, elaborate on that here. I want you to notice some of the bigger picture things that are in play here that transcend, you know, what's said in any given, you know, enumerated item here. You've got four, five, and six. Items four, five, and six there. Okay? Those are the three reservoirs of potential. You know, if that hasn't sunk in, you know, I mean, unlimited capacity, you know, the unqualified absolute, the universal absolute, and the deity absolute, or I should say them in the order, you know, deity absolute, unqualified absolute, universal absolute, those are the three reservoirs of potential, you know, and from just a simple, you know, if you go to the, you know, threefold actuality of the unity, matter, mind, and spirit, you can think of the deity absolute as a reservoir for spirit substance, the unqualified absolute is a reservoir for material substance, and the universal absolute is a reservoir for mind energy. You know, lots of other things you can say, but that's a simple starting point. Three reservoirs for those three energies, the threefold actuality. Okay, the other four things, you know, item number one, two, three, and seven, notice what they have in common. They started us out with, when they listed the seven absolutes infinity, they've stressed source and center. But notice that the first thing they start to develop a little bit more is not the source part. They're setting the source part aside for a second. Items 1, 2, 3, and 7 are all about the center aspect of those three. See? Look at how convergent, convergent, convergent And what does it say in 7? Centered in. Okay. Okay. They're just focusing on the center part of those sources and centers. To begin with. Why do they do that? Because that's the root of what they are existentially. For instance, you know, when you look on the infinite eternal ellipse and we're looking at the circuit of the Father, if I'm here in the seventh level domain and I start looking around to the roots of the Father, you know, universal controller, universal creator, universal Father, first source, the first center. The first center is the root. Not the source, the center is the root. Yeah? And the source is built upon the center. Okay, that root. It's purposely said in that order, source and center. And then when they want to be a little more pithy, they just drop the and put a hyphen between the two. It's a source center. You have these source centers. The center is the root, and then you've tacked on source with a hyphen. Okay, literally, just, you know, grammatically, that's what you've done when you create source center. Okay, the center is the root. Let's talk specifically about when they're talking about the mind. Okay, so the infinite spirit is the source, the absolute source center of mind. But notice how they purposely say a little bit more about other things, the master spirits and stuff there. We've talked about that back when we were going through the Supreme Papers. Okay, when you're talking about a given super universe, you have 7 master spirits for the 7 super universes. A given master spirit in a given super universe, like the 7th master spirit in our super universe, he is the source center for the mind in our super universe. He's the source center, you know. So you take the absolute source center, you downstep it to a single super universe, and the master spirit is the source center. Now, what about the other way around? What if you talk about the source as the root and then center's tacked on? What about, you know, remember we talked about this? In a local universe, or in a super universe, if the source center is the master spirit, who's the center source? Who's source first, center second? Remember the seven reflective mother spirits. In each super universe, there's 7 reflective mother spirits, you know, that are the womb of mind, the actual womb. Or take it down to the local universe level. You know, we're in this mind womb of our creative mother spirit. She's our local center source. When you first start to understand the local universe mother spirit, the creative mother spirit, you recognize she's the source of your mind. That's the first thing that sinks in. And then you realize, wait a minute, and that mind has a center, the individuality of the whole. Yeah. You notice again, individuality of the whole, center, source, in that order. that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build up the recognition. When we're talking about the mother, we're trying to build up, we start with source, that's where you start, and then you bring in center, the individuality of the whole. Okay, but when you're talking about, for instance, the infinite spirit or the 7 master spirits, you don't start with source, you start with center, just like they did here. The first thing they said about them was not the source part of them, the center part of them, that everything is convergent to that absolute point. So start there, understand the center, then add in some understanding of, you know, how you can talk about, say, the Isle of Paradise as being a source. But second, it's a source center. Okay? The factualizing mind of the Supreme as a time-space experience in Magistan. That's what really got this conversation started back there in the Supreme Papers. Remember, they're talking about this. Okay, so you have the Supreme Being, or if you want to, personify the mind of the Supreme Being, the Supreme Mind, capital S, capital M. You're talking about the Supreme Mind, up there in the Absonite. And then they said, okay, now, but there, it's not just up there. There's a cosmic presence of the Supreme Mind. The cosmic presence of that Supreme Mind is reflectivity. What is that? What is the, that Supreme Mind look when you downstep, so it's cosmic presence. It's called reflectivity. And they say there is a, which order is it? Is it going to be root center or root source when you're talking about Majestan? No, center first, yep. They said there's a source center for reflectivity, for that cosmic presence of the Supreme Mind. He's Majestan. Okay? Again, see, why is there a Majestan? Why doesn't the Supreme Being just do it? Because, like we've tried to stress, the Supreme Being is an absonite individual. There has to be some way. He can't be down in the finite as a, expressing as a source center. There needs to be an intermediary phenomenon called Majestan who can be the source center for reflectivity, engaging it in the finite domain. When you're talking about the whole grand universe like that, so if Majestan is this indirect source center, who's the center source at the grand universe scale? Universal Mother, right? See, there's, when you're talking about source centers, you're going to say he. When you talk about center sources, that's she. One is engaging you in father-like fashion, one's engaging you in mother-like fashion. Okay? If it's a source first, that's mother. If it's a center first, that's father. Or he and she. If you go beyond just talking about the universal father and the universal mother, that's the relationship between he and she to those. Okay, so here, see, we're talking about the he part, but we've already spent a lot of time developing this. Every time we talk about a source center, we should be able to flip around and think, oh yeah, well, even though I'm not talking about center sources right now, the mother component of the picture, that's always there. I can remind myself, what's the center source, at each level, and that's what this does. This third column, we have the creators and the controllers, but we have this third column, the cosmic mothers. Those are the center sources at each one of those levels. Mm-hmm. All right, so just want to really get that stressed home and just notice how it's not just some meaningless semantics. It's very, if you can just reflect on that simple little thing, the difference of whether or not you put source or center first in that hyphenated construct, is telling you I'm going in at the he part or the she part of this picture. Did you have a question?
I wanted to ask, the source center is the father, right? The source center.
Yeah. If the center is the root,
right.
And then it's a he-like phenomenon. It's related to you in a he-like fashion, not a she-like fashion.
So when you talk about the first source and center,
we're
talking about
the father. Well, no, it's purpose. It's not the first center and source. They purposely, source and center, and becomes hyphen. That's what the hyphen means when you hyphenate two words. It's a contraction that means and. That's what the hyphen means. It's literally, a source center is a source and center. But in that order, the root is center. See, so they're using the language very precisely. To try to get you, to have a way into the truth here. If you just think precisely like that, and only your material consciousness can think precisely like that, like split the difference between source center and center source. Your unity consciousness blurs those two together. And can't understand it. Can't figure out what's the difference between mother and father. But your material consciousness, your individuality consciousness, distinguishes them and understands, the differential there. I get it. And they're all in a unity picture. Now my spiritual consciousness, can encompass that. That's what the role of your spiritual consciousness is, to be able to take all of the details and encompass it in a unity. But if there's no details, what are you wrapping your spiritual consciousness around? A vacuum. Emptiness. That's so many people, when they don't that favor their spiritual consciousness to start with, that's what all they've got. They've got the wonderful, skin of this bubble, but there's nothing inside of it. There's nothing that you can understand. You have to just sort of, I can feel it, I guess. But if you bring in the material consciousness, you can understand and you can recognize, and it all has to be one. Because deity, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. There has to be oneness, and unity in play here. But it's not the simplicity, the singularity of just, there's the I am and that's it. Because there's no place for me in that picture.
Okay, so when you say the first source and center, mm-hmm. my mind is registering it as the first father-mother. First source and center.
The first source center. The first source center. It's the first source center. That's a he.
Center meant mom and source and father.
No. Center first, source second means.
Okay, so you have to have the two words together.
Yeah. Which is the root word?
Okay.
Is it center or is it source?
The first word is an adjective. The second word is.
Yeah, it's qualifying. That word. When you create two hyphenated things, you've got a root word, and you're qualifying it by sticking this hyphenated thing onto the front of it, like a prefix.
It's like a root ball.
This compound word.
Okay.
See? Well, the whole book starts you. They're starting you with the seven absolutes of infinity. He's. Yeah. Right.
Until you explain that, you've explained a lot of times before, but I would just subjectively hear the first source and center. I would focus on source as being the root word. And center as being a qualifier.
Yeah.
Now I recognize that's backwards.
Right.
I'm wondering, why didn't they say the first center and source to make it easier for us?
No. Because see, again, do you want to be challenged or not?
Yeah.
See? Remember, what was one of the very first things they told you? More or less distortion of meaning is going to be in every single sentence you read. Every single sentence is going to be a challenge to not think of it the way you have an initial tendency to think about it. Because if you follow your initial tendency, it'll be more distortion of meaning. That they told you right up front. Don't do that. Don't go, all I understand is this, so I've got to make it fit into that. All you're going to get is distortion of meaning. It's like, whoa, if you say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. That's right. That's what I'm looking for. I want a reformed relationship to language, for instance. They're trying to reform, right? They're trying to reform your entire use of the language. They're trying to actually show you not a different use of the English language. They're trying to show you the true use of the English language. Everything I'm saying, if you go and study the details of it, it's like, that's actually, I didn't teach me that in grammar school. Why didn't they teach me that in grammar school? They called it grammar school. How come they didn't teach me grammar?
They did in my school.
Right. Okay.
Sydney brought up a couple months ago about, getting these translations out in these different languages. Now, I don't think it's universal that all languages on this planet put the qualifier first and the root second. I think that can be different.
Sure. Right.
That's why they specify they do it in the English language. And that when you get these translations out, they can be, you're not going to get all this, this subtlety that Chris is digging out here is going to be kind of hodgepodge.
All right, you don't even have to read a translation to know, oh dear, that makes me cringe just thinking about it. What on earth does that translation say? Does it really embrace the truth? Did the person who translated it recognize the truth in order to be able to, you know, translate the words and not lose the truth? it's not that you shouldn't necessarily attempt to translate, but you should do it with great humility, recognizing that this has to be an endless work in progress. Every time you make a step forward in your understanding of the truth of the revelation, you're going to go, oh boy, I've got to retranslate 95% of what I did. It's going to be a really sobering recognition about what it means to translate this thing. Because the purpose of this book is not to reveal facts. Computers can translate facts. Okay? How do you translate truth?
You said something earlier that I wanted to just go back to. You talked about a bubble without a whole lot inside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems to me that you can have that bubble and you're just fine. You have a relationship with God. Or you have a relationship. You may not understand much about it, but you've got that basic faith construct.
The faintest flicker of faith graduates.
Yeah. That's
cool. It's not an issue. I mean, again, nothing that we're talking about has anything to do with salvation. It has nothing to do with it. You know, it has to do with, okay, I'm cool with the faint flicker and the fact that I'm saved. Is that it? Am I done? What's infinity for if that's all there is? You know, so that's what the fifth epical revelation is here for. It's not to show you the way to salvation. It's like, is this complicated? I have to know the difference between the universal controller and the universal creator in order to be saved? You know, it has nothing to do with that. It's like, well, I want to understand why there's matter and spirit and how God is related to that. Because those are different. It's got to be, you know, how does that work? Okay. That's what this is for. Yep, Jason.
But
you want to just hold it?
It doesn't have anything to do with salvation. I mean, it does more or less to the choosing and to the new four focuses on civilization.
It's indirectly related. I mean, if you're an individual who is looking for a logical relationship with God and you've gone to every church doorstep in the world and have not found it, and are beginning to lose your faint flicker of faith, no, you don't, okay. How much logic do you want to God? I can give you a fire hose. I can give you the entire ocean. There's as much logic of God here as you could ever wrap your mind around, okay? That should never be a stumbling block. I mean, if you don't get anything out of this, you know, you should know that, you know, there you can always understand it if you want to take that next step and challenge yourself. Don't ever I guess I'm just going to have faith, i.e. I'm just going to have to believe with an empty cranium, you know, just that spiritual bubble, you know, with echoes inside of it.
Of this newer interpretation of, or, you know, revelation of God to our planet.
There's a lot of people, that's why I said what I just said, there's a lot of people that are stumbling unnecessarily. Don't stumble. If you're serious about having a relationship with God, ask a better question. Okay? And guess what? Those questions have all been answered. it's impossible to even wrap your mind around. There's a book that answers all those questions. Okay? They actually have given us a book that answers all the questions you can think of and 600 million you've never even thought of. I mean, how amazing is that?
It seems to me that it's more than just intellectual entertainment or a hobby. Yeah. It seems that this is relevant if you are interested in serving, if you are interested in being a part of the Supreme.
Right.
You can't do that without knowing what the context is, and this gives you
context. We've stressed that a lot. You know, why is it that I engage this? Is it because I want to be able to spout endless details? No. It's because I'm trying to supply the favorable conditions between my ears so that I can be grown. Okay, if I have a space that's only that big, God can't do much with that. If I supply the favorable conditions, if I wrap my consciousness around a bigger part of the picture, God goes, finally. Your thought adjuster goes, wow, this feels less like a prison now. Okay, I'm not in a straitjacket anymore. I actually can move my arms inside of your... Remember, your adjuster is in your mind. Your mind is a literal thing with a capacity, a size. If your mind is only that big, the adjuster has to cram himself in there, crowbar himself into that tiny little space. And good thing they aren't claustrophobic, okay? Okay? You can think about it literally. You're literally trying to make the temple within bigger. What would it be like if the adjuster actually wasn't in a straitjacket? What would it be like if the adjuster could do that and breathe? What would my life be like? What would it feel like to have a breathing adjuster inside of me instead of one that's...
Snorkeling.
Yeah?
Snorkeling, yeah.
Trying, you know, to expand his chest against these chains that you've wrapped around it.
Can you think of it as a safety
harness? Well, the small space is safety for you initially. Why does God start you small? Why didn't he just make me big so that, you know, the adjuster could have had it big? Because you would immediately get lost in a great big space. He starts you small because you start as a child. You don't start as an adult. The space has to be small to start with. But you have to choose. You didn't have to choose that initial size that was given to you by grace. But you have every measure that it gets bigger has to be a choice. It is not grown one nanometer without choice. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I have here individuality of the whole, and whole is related to source,
mm-hmm.
and individuality is related
to center.
You
know, the mother is the individuality of the whole.
Well, so the mother is the center source. The father is the source, the whole.
No. The father is neither the whole nor the individuality of the whole.
So what's the source of this? You said the center was him.
I mean, the easiest way to just think about it, like the local universe. There's a domain of mind, there's a womb of mind. That's a source. It's a big reservoir of mind that you can plug into. You tap into the source. Now you're minded. Okay? But it's not just an impersonal cistern of mind energy. Someone didn't just make this big, cold, dark cistern and dump mind energy into it and then walk away. Literally inside of that mind is an individuality, a center. The mother. Yeah. Yeah. She starts out as just a creative spirit where it really is not personal and it's just a source. But the more mother deity can manifest, the more center there is tacked onto that source. And literally, the more literally thicker and focused she is on Salvington. You know, and post the seven bestowals, we talked about that. She is now so, there's so much center that's been added to her initial sourceness that even you and I can see that center now and engage her as a person. How cool is that? Okay. Yeah. There's a tangible individuality to the whole now for even lowly humans. It's one of the things that Michael did for us by going through those seven bestowals. Because she's in complementary synchrony with what he's doing. And she becomes more of a center source than just a source like she started out. You know, and in the same way, you know, it's the other way around. You know, you start out very center and then you're adding in source if it's a he manifestation. Unless it's an absolute thing, of course, then it's all there to begin with. But if it's existential, source center. But okay, okay, one more thing.
Well, just to clarify, I mean, it's not that one, father aspect is source, mother aspect. I mean, it's not that simplistic. They're both sources and they're both centers. It's just which aspect is more of a primal source or center, and which one has the other aspect added to it.
Right. I mean, and see, we've talked about that a lot. When we got into total deity, we discovered that all those sevenfold facets of the deity, the I Am, there was one that was different than the other six. The universal one of infinity had two faces. The universal one of infinity is there and there in the same level twice. One of them is the center side, literally called the first center. The other side is the source side. The Paradise Trinity is source first. You know, there's so the universal one of infinity, you know, on the one side gives origin to that which is source first, mother, and on the other side gives origin to that which is center first, father. That, you know, because the universal one infinity is the original, not he or she, the original. But there's a she root face and a he root face to the original. Yeah. Okay, that's how we began to understand where the mother comes from. So you have to distinguish. Yeah. Okay. let's read some more. Let's read some more. We can ask a trillion questions here. Okay.
Reality, as comprehended by finite beings, is partial, relative, and shadowy. The maximum deity reality, fully comprehensible by evolutionary finite creatures, is embraced within the supreme being. Nevertheless, there are antecedent and eternal realities, superfinite realities, which are ancestral to this supreme deity of evolutionary time-space creatures. In attempting to portray the origin and nature of universal reality, we are forced to employ the technique of time-space reasoning in order to reach the level of the finite mind. Therefore, must many of the simultaneous events of eternity be presented as sequential transactions.
But they're going to do it without breaking the truth. It's going to be, they're telling you, okay, it has to be a qualified statement to start you out, but I'm never going to, when I'm qualifying the way I'm approaching you, I'm speaking for the Divine Counselor here, he's saying, as I qualify the way I'm initially approaching you, there is no error. I have downstepped the picture, preserving the truth. Just one little thing, and we talked about this when we brought up the ellipse here. You know, if I'm in the fifth level domain here, and I look to my horizon lines on each side, you know, they just alluded to one of those horizon lines. The maximum deity reality, fully comprehensible by evolutionary finite creatures, is embraced within the supreme being. Okay, I'm sitting here and I'm looking to this horizon line, and all that's, above the horizon is supreme. Okay, remember we purposely put it like this so you could literally imagine. I'm standing here and I'm looking to this horizon. I can't see below the horizon. I can't see the ultimate, and etc. I can only see to my horizon line, just like they just said there. you know, which encompasses the Supreme. Okay, and notice the word that should have caught your eye there too. And you know, they say, nevertheless, there are antecedent. How many times we use the word antecedent when we're talking about the Supreme? What's the two words we always put together? Antecedent following. Yeah. See, there's an ancestral. See, again, right there. See, if you think about what they're saying, oh, yeah, see, they are really telling me. It starts with the absent and then goes to the finite. You know, it's antecedent. That which is beyond that horizon line is not post-finite in the real picture. It's antecedent. It's ancestral. Okay. It's coming from the absentite through from the absolute through the absentite down to the finite. That's the way it's actually getting to you. Okay.
As a time-space creature would view the origin and differentiation of reality, the eternal and infinite I Am achieved deity liberation from the fetters of unqualified infinity through the exercise of inherent and eternal free will. And this divorcement from unqualified infinity produced the first absolute divinity tension. This tension of infinity differential is resolved by the universal absolute, which functions to unify and coordinate the dynamic infinity of total deity and the static infinity of the unqualified absolute.
That one little paragraph, see, is embracing a lot of time that we spent when we went through total deity and we unraveled all that. Let's just do it, go do a little synopsis of that, unraveling of that. Okay, first of all, notice reality is capitalized there. I've pointed that out before. You know, up here, it's one thing about how they talk about it up in deity and reality. Here they're trying to be as simple as possible to start with. And so, but he's trying to make sure you don't just think of any old thing when he says reality. He capitalized it and you should go, well, why in the heck did he capitalize it? What does he mean by that? You know, we just talked about it a little bit ago. The totality of reality, you know, the proper, not, or, you know, the common noun, but the designation for it is infinity, lowercase I. Or if you want to stress that that's a name for reality in distinguishing between deity and reality, you'll call it infinity reality, hyphenated. So the totality of reality is infinity or infinity reality. Or if you're still in an introductory stage and that's too complicated to say infinity reality hyphenated, well, drop the infinity and the hyphen and make it a capital R. Okay, capital R reality is infinity reality. You know, and that, you know, you basically, you know, he started out total infinite reality, and that was the first thing he said. Okay, you can put that together if you're really thinking. Okay, so just that little detail. And this whole bit about, you know, the liberation from the fetters of unqualified infinity. Remember how we picked up on these little clues here, and we said, okay, we're going to do the in the beginning of the I Am story a little bit differently. We're not going to do the individuality viewpoint so much. We're going to think about it in a little bit more unity-like terms, and we're going to say, okay, in the beginning was I Am, and then it separates into two aspects. One we called total will, capital T, capital W, and the other one we called total deity, capital T, capital D. Okay, and remember that, you know, if this wasn't a title, that T would not be capitalized. You know, that's lowercase T and capital D. When we're talking about, you know, we're just talking about total everything. But they use, there's in, you know, in this right here in these two paragraphs, they give you this little suggestion. See. Of a term. It's like, well, what the heck am I supposed to use capital T, capital D, total D for? What is that referring to? And we sorted that all out when we went through that. This is the way it works. You know, think about this. See, notice, through the exercise of inherent and eternal free will, i.e. the total will separated itself from total deity. Okay, and that total will we then recognized it was the infinite one. When we started to actually give it deity names, rather than this conceptual thing, you know, I am and total will and total deity are conceptual names. But when you start to going to actual factual deity names, okay, total will, that's the infinite one. And the relationship of the infinite one to itself, this thing that separated itself from total deity, the relationship of the infinite one to itself is the universal father. Oh, there's the universal father. You know, one of the seven absolutes of infinity. Okay, well, how did the total deity work? The total deity got separated into the infinitude and the infinity. Total deity became the infinitude and the infinity. And so now I have, well, the relationship of the infinitude to itself, that's the infinite capacity. The relationship of the infinity to itself is the universal absolute or the infinite upholder. And the relationship of the infinitude to the infinity, yeah, around and around that relationship, that's the deity absolute. That's the infinite potential. So you started with total will, and that became the universal father when you take it like this. And then we started with total deity, and that became the unqualified absolute, the deity absolute, and the universal absolute. Three more of the seven absolutes of infinity. Okay. So now understand what they said here? You take total deity, and there's three things that get expressed out of total deity. One of those things of total deity is the dynamic infinity of total deity. That's called the deity absolute. Another one is the static infinity of total deity. That's called the unqualified absolute. And the other one is the infinity differential of total deity. That's called the universal absolute. See, so here's, and just notice that. See, look at that, the end of that sentence. They say the dynamic infinity of total deity and the static infinity of the unqualified absolute. They're using of in two different ways. Yeah? You know, again, so if you approach it, it's like, well, of always means the same thing. It's like, no, look up of in the dictionary. It's got a whole bunch of different senses, okay? Did they say, now, don't forget, I'm using of in two different ways. No, they never don't say that. More distortion of meaning if I assume they're using it in the same way. Okay? So the of, dynamic infinity of total deity, i.e., it comes out of total deity, of in that sense. Static infinity of unqualified absolute, it's designated that, of in that sense. But the keys to get you started is like, well, wait a minute, total deity, they haven't defined that. What do they mean by that? It's got a capital. I mean, see, you're supposed to spend the years that it takes to put that all together unless someone else has put it together for you and can point it out and you can recognize, oh, okay, that makes sense. Now it all fits together. Okay. Total will separated from total deity. Got it?
I still don't see it your way. Maybe I'll have to talk to you.
Okay, okay.
Because the way they're describing the dynamic is total deity, the static, they're not using total deity.
I see, like I said, if you use of the same way, that's the way it looks. That's what the sentence looks like. But of has more than one sense.
Meaning.
And so you got to figure out. I mean, it's got lots and lots. Look it up in the dictionary. It's not like three. It's not like four. It's like a lot of different senses. Every time you see the word of, you got to figure out. You got to recognize how the author used the word of. It can have many different senses. If you pick the wrong sense, you're not going to understand what he's saying. Yeah. That's, again, this is always in play. Okay.
In this original transaction, the theoretical I am achieved the realization of personality by becoming the eternal father of the original son, simultaneously with becoming the eternal source of the Isle of Paradise. Coexistent with the differentiation of the son from the father and in the presence of paradise, there appeared the person of the infinite spirit and the central universe of Havona. With the appearance of coexistent personal deity, the eternal Son and the infinite spirit, the Father escaped as a personality from otherwise inevitable diffusion throughout the potential of total deity. Thenceforth, it is only in Trinity association with his two deity equals that the Father fills all deity potential, while increasingly experiential deity is being actualized on the divinity levels of supremacy, ultimacy, and absoluteness.
Okay. A little bit more of the picture. I won't force everyone to go back, but if when I read that paragraph up there in, when they're talking, going to talk about the triunities, they used capital F Father and capital P Pattern. And here they're using eternal Father and eternal Source. You know, the eternal Father, that's the universal Father. Eternal Source, or up there they use capital P Pattern, that's the universal controller. And notice that they did just what I mentioned you could do. Instead of using the word universal, they used the word eternal. See? Not infinite, eternal. Yeah. That's best understood as an eternal facet, you know, in your initial attempt to understand it, not an infinite facet. Okay, so you have the universal Father and the universal controller relating to the eternal Son and the Isle, is what they're pointing out there. And you know, again, by using those, you know, bringing out those two, you know, they aren't bringing out universal Creator. Notice they're bringing out universal Father and universal controller, and it's because, you see, like I said, that's the gateway, you know, in this understanding of the Father. Those two, you know, again, like go back to that paragraph up there in what was that, paper 104, and notice that they don't give any sort of proper designation for any other facet of the Father. They just, you know, focused on those two in creating a capitalized word, capital F Father and capital P Pattern. They're wanting you to start with those two, okay? Okay, so again, see, notice how they're utilizing total deity. Related to what you were saying, John, the more you reflect on it, the more you'll begin to appreciate of those three absolutes, the unqualified absolute, the universal absolute, and the deity absolute. There's one that is, in your efforts to understand what's going on, is a lot closer to total deity. That's why it's called the deity absolute. See? And so there is a high degree of synonymousness to thinking about the, you know, those as synonyms. You know?
Well, and you told me earlier too, but we're looking at it from the our perspective,
yeah,
looking up.
Right.
It's not from the top down.
Yeah. From a bottom-up viewpoint, you could say, well, total deity is just another name for the deity absolute.
That's how they seem to be describing
right.
it.
Right. Well, and you know
every
that's
time I read it, it's right. that way.
You see, you know that's, they purposely worded it like that, so that's where you start. And that's fine, that gets you, that'll carry you for years. It's only when you start to try to understand it in a little more detail, it's like, wait a minute, now that I think about it, they weren't forcing me to do that, were they? And if I use...
It's a starting point.
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to be... The starting point is always going to be individuality viewpoint, bottom-up kind of viewpoint. That's where they start you. And so they're trying not to assail that. They're trying not to make... Remember, it's got to be evolutional, not revolutional. They don't want to totally shatter your whole picture by forcing you to somehow take a unity viewpoint to start with. They carefully word it so that you can start there comfortably. But the more you think about it, it's like, wait a minute, I want to challenge myself here. I think, yeah, I see, when I wrote that thing in the total deity, I didn't have to coin that. It's like, wait a minute, they already coined that, didn't they? Of course. You know, that's when I figured out why they capitalized the T in this. I've been wondering that for you. Why in the heck is this? What does that mean? Why have they capitalized? Why is it in no other place in the book? It's just these two paragraphs, two times. What the heck do they mean by that? It's a suggestion for a name for something that if you, the more you think about it, it's like, you know, I have a thing that I need a separate name for. I can't call that the deity absolute. I need another name for that. It's antecedent. What I want to have a name for is antecedent to the deity absolute. Call it the deity, capital T. Okay. And then the last thing there, thenceforth, it is only in Trinity association with these two deity equals that the Father fills all deity potential. Let's think about that in a little less seven absolutes picture. The Trinity fills all deity potential. Yeah. The functioning of the Trinity wraps all the way around the infinite eternal ellipse. Trinity of absoluteness, Trinity of ultimacy, Trinity of supremacy. The functioning of the Trinity wraps all around. Now, if you think about the three coming together and their super additive consequence, the Trinity, like I said, you've got that direct statement that it functions on all levels. I mean, they're just kind of saying it again there. And as soon as they say that, then they bring in experiential deity. That's the gateway to understanding where experiential deity comes from. It's the Trinity. Yeah. That's not obvious when you first read this. It's only obvious now in all this retrospect, now that we've put together all the Supreme Papers and the Mother and all that. Oh, yeah, look at that. That's exactly how they did it. If you go to the Trinity, that leads to experiential deity. Okay.
The concept of the I Am is a philosophic concession which we make to the time-bound, space-fettered, finite mind of man, to the impossibility of creature comprehension of eternity existences, non-beginning, non-ending realities and relationships. To the time-space creature, all things must have a beginning, save only the one uncaused, capitalized, one uncaused, the primeval cause of causes. Therefore do we conceptualize this philosophic value level as the I Am, at the same time instructing all creatures that the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit are co-eternal with the I Am. In other words, that there never was a time when the I Am was not the Father of the Son and with him of the Spirit.
Okay, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. You know, that's, you know, one little paragraph that's kind of condensing, you know, quite extensive discussion of the I Am up there in deity and reality. Bringing it into here is a little preface to these couple other points that they want to make in the last two paragraphs. You know, a one uncaused, you know, an infinite one sounds like a good name for a one uncaused. You know, that's one of the things we've discovered, this whole notion of oneness. You know, another way of thinking about total will separating from total deity is oneness separating from unity. You know, wait a minute, I thought those were synonyms. No, they don't have to be. You know, oneness separated, it's freed itself from the fetters of unqualified unity. You know, or like they said, an otherwise inevitable diffusion throughout the potential of unity, of total deity. The oneness needs to separate itself from the unity. You know, a center-like thing needs to separate itself from a source-like thing. That's first. But then, of course, they immediately come into relationship. You know, the source part can have some relationship to centeredness, and the centeredness can have a relationship to the sourceness. You know, but see, where do they start? One starts center, one starts source. And that, I don't want to go too far with that, but you know, that gets into, you know, understanding how when you talk about, instead of talking about them as the reservoirs, the unqualified absolute and the universal absolute and the deity absolute, if you use the deity names, the infinite potential, the infinite capacity, and the infinite upholder, how those three relate to bringing mother deity into existence. Source first. Okay, that's, you know, that's getting us too far afield. But that is how, you know, that's what we're, see, notice that's what we're focusing on. There's only four of these things we've been talking and talking and talking about: the universal Father, and then these three. See, and that's what we're really separating. We're separating root of Father from, you know, origin of Mother. Okay, so you know, so everyone kind of appreciates that concept, the concept of the I Am. You know, and like I said, the concept of the total will and the concept of total deity. Those are concepts to get you, you know, like they said, you know, we're going to talk to you. Where was that? Oh, yeah. Therefore, must many of the simultaneous events of eternity be presented as sequential transactions. Those three concepts, I Am, total will, total deity, are allow you to get you started with this whole causal way of thinking. And then, but then once you get all of the different facets of the deity, the I Am, and, you know, the singular, the triune, and the sevenfold facets, like we did in total deity, then you can, you know, let go of those concepts and just work with the all the facets of actual deity, not concepts, but actual facets of deity. And notice what they do here.
The infinite is used to denote the fullness, the finality implied by the primacy of the first source and center. The theoretical I Am is a creature philosophic extension of the infinity of will, but the infinite is an actual value level representing the eternity intention of the true infinity of the absolute and unfettered free will of the universal Father. This concept is sometimes designated the Father Infinite. Okay. Much of the
No, don't go to that. Okay, you see, now, again, up here in the foreword, you know, all you got is this one little paragraph, and it's just fraught with, okay, what the heck does that paragraph mean? Okay, after you've spent years, you know, and gotten to the point where you can unravel deity and reality, you know, and all that, you can come back to this paragraph, and you can see what he's condensed into this paragraph. See, he's trying to give you this first little tease out of the fuzziness of just the concept of the I Am. You know, and he starts out gently. It's like, well, okay, so you can just think of the infinite. He's used to donate the fullness, the finality implied by the primacy of the first source and center. It's like, oh, okay. But see, notice what he does. But the infinite is an actual. And he italicizes actual. You know, that's what there's a facet, you know, when you talk about total deity, there is a facet. One of these boxes has a designation in it that's labeled the infinite. It's not a concept. It's that actual fact right there. Okay? The I Am, the singular deity, the I Am, you know, as an actual deity facet is called the infinite. Or another way of saying it, the I Am as I Am that which exists, the ongoing direct expression of that singular fact of the I Am that which exists, the name for that is the infinite. Right now, it's an actual value level. Okay? So, you know, you may start with in the beginning of the I Am, and it's a theoretical thing, and then you burn your bridges and leave it behind. But at that starting point, before you go anywhere else, there's an ongoing direct expression of the singularness that you have right there. It keeps on going when you let go of the concept of the I Am. That direct expression, that ongoing direct expression is the infinite. Okay? And look at all the stuff that's in here. Like, infinity of will, quote-unquote. Gee, if I coined a proper designation for that, what would I call that? Well, they used this total deity for one of them. Ah, I could call that total will, capital T, capital W. That's the infinity of will, is that total will, see, in the picture. That's what we're giving a proper designation when we coined total will to pair with total deity. And look at how they word it. When we started talking about the infinite eternal looks, ellipse. We said, okay, here we are in the finite level, the fifth level domain. And when I look this way, in my time viewpoint, you know, I go to supremacy and ultimacy. I'm looking towards eternity when I look this way around the ellipse. When I look this way around the ellipse, clockwise around the ellipse, I'm looking towards infinity. So I'm looking towards eternity this way and infinity this way. And the thing, amazing thing we discovered is that infinity and eternity meet. They aren't just going off in opposite directions. They wrap around and connect. So now think about carefully, think precisely about this. So they're talking about, you know, they come to this final thing about, they're talking about the Father. It's like, well, okay, so let me think about what they're saying. So I've got the circuit of the Father, and I'm here in the fifth level domain, and I start looking back, you know, towards the roots of the Father. Well, if I look all the way back to the eternity intention, so if I look all the way back to eternity, you know, remember that's eternity, I look all the way back, where true infinity isn't that direction and eternity, that true infinity wraps around and connects to eternity. See, so I look back to eternity at the roots of true infinity. And what am I doing? Notice what I'm doing. As I look back this way, my horizon ends with the universal Father. What lies beyond the horizon line as I look back that way? So I take the Father back past that. I'm in a domain where the Father is in direct association with the Absolute. They use that. The Father hyphen Absolute, capital F, capital A. That's used in the book. When they say Father Absolute, what that means is, take, you know, remember this, just talk, don't talk about God the Father, just the Father, the deity that is this, you know, this is the circuit of the Father, not the circuit of God the Father, it's the circuit of the Father, the deity. If I follow that deity back to the point where it's parallel to the Absolute, I have the amount of the Father that's the Father Absolute. That's what that means. If I follow it all the way back where the Father is in direct association with the infinite, what do I have? Last word, the Father Infinite. The Father Infinite is what you have when you take the Father all the way back to where the Father is parallel to the infinite, where the Father meets the infinite. So there's the universal Father. I take it back a notch, the Father Absolute. I take it all the way back, the Father Infinite. That's what that term means. And you can just see it just right there in the chart. Okay. See, and it's the eternity intention of true infinity. And notice how they even were. See, oh, and look at, they even took me through the step there. I had to go through absolute and unfettered free will. I had to go through the Father Absolute. See, what's the Father at that level where it's the Father Absolute, the Absolute? It's the Infinite One, the reservoir of all will, unfettered free will. See, if you know what he had in his head, you can see how he wrote these sentences. He's just looking around this ellipse, and he's describing the journey. As I pass through here, I'm passing through the absolute, the point where the Father is in association with the absolute, and it's the reservoir of all will, and I keep following it back, and I've got all the way back to the root, the Father Infinite. See, we can understand the foreword. You can understand every word precisely.
You were reading in the forward, trying to understand it. I had a straight line.
Yeah.
You know, looking up.
And
it kind of just disappears into the blue.
Right. Yeah, it does. See, that's what we're representing here. When you just try to look at it up and down, it dead ends here and dead ends there. You're missing half of the picture. An entire half of the picture is missing when you just take a linear, finite extrapolation viewpoint.
And that half that's missing is above,
yeah,
transcendent, right, what they're describing here, and that's what's, yeah, laid out in deity and reality.
It's antecedent and eternal. Antecedent and eternal. Okay?
Yeah. Well, you're overlaying what you guys went through on beauty yeah. and reality, and I wasn't yeah. here for that. And I yeah. just never,
I
still...
But allow yourself, it's okay. I mean...
But it's like myself wants to just sit. It's a nice little compact description here, and I just want to, you know, it's comfortable for me. That's so fine. Maybe I need to work
That's
out
fine.
Of that myself and start to...
There's a reason why he gave this. So you could have an initial comfort level. You know? That's why he wrote it this way.
Everything
you know?
Coming out of the deity absolute.
He wrote one little paragraph here like we just read.
Sequential is code for bottom up.
You go all the way up to paper 105 and they say, well, you should have been dwelling in the comfortness of that one little paragraph up there and forward long enough. Now I'm going to give you the sledgehammer. Okay. So now that you really appreciate what you mean when you say Father Infinite, you know, that's the deity of the Father taken all the way back to the root. Okay.
Much of the confusion of all orders of beings, high and low, in their efforts to discover the Father Infinite is inherent in their limitations of comprehension. The absolute primacy of the universal Father is not apparent on sub-infinite levels. Therefore, is it probable that only the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit truly know the Father as an infinity? To all other personalities, such a concept represents the exercise of faith.
Okay. Now, don't let the word faith be a synonym for belief. Faith is personal. Recognition. Okay? It's a recognition. It's a use of your three cosmic intuitions. You know, it's not deductive reasoning. It's not the ability to look up the words on the page in a dictionary. It's being able to recognize. It's being able to transcend your finite limitations that they're talking about here. You know, see this inherent in their limitations of comprehension. Like, for instance, you have this horizon line of what you can directly see. Directly seeing, i.e., what you can just put together with your adjutant mind, you know, in terms of extrapolating and, you know, connecting dots. It has these definitive horizon lines. The only way to get a reality response to this whole half of the picture is what goes beyond mere sight. You need to have the insight to see beyond the horizon lines. You have to have the three cosmic insights. Okay? And which of those three insights initiates this insight into the rest of the picture? The personal recognition insight, faith. Okay? The third cosmic intuition. Okay, the Father is the initiator. Yeah. Faith in God the Father, who is love. Right? Yeah. The faith is tied. Let the Father and your third cosmic intuition, your personal recognition, initiate this insight. Now bring in the other two insights. You know, especially. Bridge it all the way over to the first. Bridge the third all the way over to the first cosmic intuition, the logical acumen, where you have a reality response to what's laid out here. And I recognize that that's logical. As a matter of fact, the fact that it's logical was just demonstrated that by just following what's here, I just understood every word in that previous paragraph. Directly, literally understood it. Okay. Did I construct it this way just so that I could rationalize that paragraph? No, I didn't even have that paragraph in my consciousness. All I did was I followed their clues. I said, you know, they gave me all these bits of knowledge and they gave me the clues of how to coordinate it. So I just laid it out. And once it's all laid out, you just... using my recognition of what they said, Then I bring in my agitated mind, and I start noticing, well, look at that. That actually works. There's the Father absolute and the Father infinite. I'll be danged. And it's the eternity. See, that discover the Urantia book, recognize what it's saying, and then interpret this paragraph. And I now choose, discover, recognize, interpret, and choose. And they italicize choose. Choose this day to expand the space of your mind. Let it be this big. Choose that. If you choose, you will be grown. That's why they italicized the word choose. Like I said, nothing is going to happen until you choose. But if you don't, if you just choose without discover, then recognize, then interpret, and then choose, just some random choice doesn't lead to growth. That's not, it's a condition, but it's not a favorable condition. Okay? You're putting your mind in a condition, but not a favorable condition for growth. You're not supplying favorable conditions. It has to go in that order. Recognition, then interpretation. Okay? And if you just stay, if you don't do that, and you just choose, you know, to kind of feel the faint flicker of the spiritual bubble, and it just stays there, okay, you're fine. The problem is many don't just stay there. Okay, if you haven't recognized, all you've done is interpret, what have you exalted with that interpretation?
Self.
Guess what the choice becomes then, one step at a time, more and more so? Self-righteousness. There, the key to preventing self-righteousness is to not forget that you do not interpret anything until you recognize. You must first recognize the cosmos, recognize the truth. And then and only then do you interpret. Otherwise, I will mold this second to last paragraph in my image. I will limit myself to my ignorance, which, if it has anything that transcends me, it's the helpless victim of the a priori assumptions of others. At best, I'll be limiting myself to the ignorance of others, as well as my ignorance. That's all you can get, And they tell you that there is nothing that can prevent this. If you're going to try to think about the big picture, except revelation, you don't have moda. It has to be revealed to you. Okay? This is, you know, if you want to go past the faint flicker of faith, this is what you need. You need the revelation so that you can recognize properly, then interpret, and then choose. And those choices lead to righteousness, not self-righteousness. So, all right. See, so it's in that. See, it's not about salvation, but it is about the righteousness of an adult. The righteousness of a little child is given to you by grace. There are no iniquitous six-year-olds. Period.
That's a revelation.
You know, you are given that by grace, an initial righteousness, so that you have a potential. But if you're going to take even one step beyond that initial gift of grace, you need something to guide you. You need the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, the Thought Adjuster, and a revelation.
Yeah, I'm 20 years old.
All right. All right, so that's should unravel that a little bit for you. I hope that, you know, I know a lot of this is probably, you know, still pretty deep to a number, especially who, you know, who haven't been reading for too long. But if you don't, the first thing that you want to get is not all these facts. That's why when I'm talking about the truth component, that's why I'm getting more passionate and trying to stress that. Because if you want to go forward, you have to have the truth first, and not the facts. You know, see this truth, recognize this truth, recognize that even if you couldn't do what I just did, unravel all these paragraphs, you should be able to recognize that that wasn't just a bunch of BS. Your reality response should have said, wow, that was really complicated, but I can tell that's not BS. Okay? That was someone was seeing a picture and describing it. I wonder if I could see that same picture and describe it myself. I wonder if I could have independent cosmic thinking, if my cosmic thinking could be independent of Chris's. Yes, it can. You know, the good news, you've been given the Holy Spirit. You've been given the three cosmic intuitions. You are separately incircuited in the gift of the Holy Spirit. You can have your absolutely unique, personal, courageous, and independent cosmic thinking. That's the good news. All right, let's take some time to reflect on that.